With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Have you heard? Metro by T-Mobile now includes Amazon Prime. Yes, enjoy the best of shopping and entertainment. Movies, TV shows, music, free shipping, and much more. All included for just $40 per line for 3 lines. All on the T-Mobile network. Discover the smarter way. Metro by T-Mobile. That's genius.
One offer per account. Offer subject to change. $12.99 per month value. Offer valid for new Amazon Prime members. Metro customers may notice reduced speeds versus some T-Mobile customers. Video at 480p. Capable device required. See store for details and terms and conditions.
This episode of the Managing Madrid podcast is brought to you by Hotel Europa in Plaza del Sol in Madrid. I know a lot of you guys are traveling to Madrid for games, in and out. We know this because our patrons have told us and asking for advice, where to go, where to eat, where to stay. Where to stay is Hotel Europa. It's in Plaza del Sol. You're in the heart of downtown. You open your balcony door. You see a crowd of people. It's energetic. It's vibrant. It's awesome. It's a good to be part of that atmosphere. You close your balcony door. You get a good night's sleep because it kind of just shelters and insulates the sound away from you. And this is good timing for this ad because our patron, Daniel Smith, as I'm sure you've seen by now, thanks to him, we're giving away a signed Sergio Ramos jersey and also 2 VIP tickets and 2 Bernabeu tour tickets. And the 2 VIP tickets can be a game of your choice, a home game that's not Valencia, Sevilla, Barca, Atletico, which just passed anyway, or Champions League. And you can choose any other game on the schedule to go to as your 2 VIP tickets. It's a great giveaway. How you enter is you got to be a patron. Patreon.com/managingmadrid is for our $10 plus patrons. So just ensure that you pledge $10 or more, and then you go and comment on the post on our Patreon page telling us why you want to win these tickets or why you should win it, and you'll automatically enter to win. So 2 things you got to do, your homework: become a $10 patron, then go comment on that post, and if you win, you book Hotel Europa and they got your back. Without further ado, this is the Managing Madrid podcast from an undisclosed park in Madrid the day after the Madrid derby with Robbie Dunn of Diario AS, ESPN FC, and Into the Calderon. Let's go. Hello and welcome to the Managing Madrid podcast. This is your host, Kian Sabani, live in Madrid, in person, with Robbie Dunn of, I lost track, you write for ESPN, Into the Calderon, please.
Yeah, Diario AS.
Save me, Diario AS.
Yeah, that's pretty
much it. That's a big one.
Yeah, yeah.
You and I were both at the game last night. What were your thoughts? I didn't get a chance to see you, it's a blur, there's a lot going on, but your initial thoughts, 0-0. Deserved, right scoreline? Fair result?
Yeah, maybe not necessarily. But in terms of how, I suppose, Simeone and how Atletico would have planned that, how they would have saw that game going, then it was exactly how it worked out. But then Real Madrid got a lot of chances that, and as we were just saying on the way here, one of those goes in and the whole conversation that we're about to have changes, the whole complexion of the game changes, and the whole debate surrounding it changes. So, yeah, and in terms of how Atletico saw it and going, and how we're used to seeing Atletico line up against Real Madrid, I think it was pretty much par for the course. But Real Madrid far more possession-based, dominant, and in that second half, I mean, okay, I understand there's a Simeone style of defensive play that's structured very not and doesn't when they don't panic, it's like that's what they planned. But I think for a lot of times last night they were just hanging on for dear life, and that's not a defensive structure. That's just hoping for the best.
That to me, that's the margin of error. Because we were talking about this before the podcast. You just mentioned it now. Asensio scores one of his chances, and all of a sudden it's 1-0. The tone changes from this style of play is outdated to, you know, great defensively in the sense that Atleti had very, very few chances. You can see that in their expected goals. You can pinpoint, like in the first half, you had the Griezmann breakaway, which Courtois saved. But in general, the tone completely changes. The flip side is, I think if Real Madrid score, Atleti find a way to just score a last-minute goal anyway, because they did that like the last 10 years, I find.
Or alternatively, Atletico get a little bit more ambitious if they went 1-0 down and then Real Madrid end up scoring 3. So it's like, listen, that's the discussion, more of a projecting as to what might have happened if this happened. But that comes down to as well why it's about process rather than results. And we can only discuss the result, I guess. Obviously, there's another debate there to be had as to who played better, who deserved more, the expected goals. But at the end of the day, they shared a point, and that's all that we can go on. But certainly, I'm not sure, because given the fact that there's this debate obviously going on about Atletico Madrid being an underdog, for years they were that, and all of a sudden, that narrative is kind of changing because of the big purchases they've bought. They've invested heavily in the last couple of years. They've got their big new stadium. They're much more they're a much bigger team than they once were. So there's more expected of them, and I think they expect more of themselves. And I think that they know that. But at the same time, when the pressure comes on against Real Madrid, you do revert back to who you are, and I think that's what happened with Atletico Madrid. But I think they expected more of themselves. I think Real Madrid expected a lot more of them in the first half, which is why we saw that more kind of back and forth. But once Real Madrid realized, and also I think we need to discuss, and I'm sure we will discuss, Dani Ceballos' role in the control of the game and their creativity and everything, that he just changed the entire, he opened the whole game up for everyone. He improved everyone around him. He made it harder for Atletico to defend them. And I think once that change happened at halftime, obviously forced with the Bale injury, but that's when Real Madrid realised, okay, this is here for the taking. And that's when Atletico realised, okay, we're going to have to be happy for a point here.
So I think that point about Atletico kind of no longer being underdogs, like the amount of talent they have on the pitch, the signings, the amount they've spent, all great players too. Like, you know, you look at some, like Rodri was fantastic, I thought. He was just a bargain of a signing. And you look at how they've kind of reversed this underdog label that they have. They're not completely out of it, but they're really, really, they've come a long way since, like, you know, before the Simeone era. It's still, like, amazing to me, despite all that, they have this, like, compromise or nonchalance about how unspectacular they are. Like, they don't seem to be bothered with, you know, being flashy or dominating or racking up the goals, but they just want to be solid and they want to get results, which is fine. I mean, it's great. It works. I think for the amount of criticism that came Lopetegui's way last night, far overshadowed anything about how good Atletico were. And I'm not saying they were good in the sense that they attacked, they put pressure on Real Madrid, because they didn't create much. Their defense really, really held up in a way that I always felt like Real Madrid this season, if they're kind of knocking on the door, teams will just eventually collapse. Atletico are just not bothered. They're patient. They don't care if they don't have the ball.
Jimenez was fantastic in this game. They really, like, Juan Fran and Felipe Luis, both excellent on defending on the flanks. They were compact. Godin was great, too. I mean, Godin and Jimenez just were clearing everything. And I think, like, it's, my point is, it's just not easy to score against this team. So I understand, like, you know, Real Madrid in the past, they had Ronaldo, which, by the way, even with him at home against Atleti, it was never clear-cut.
Never easy, no.
Never easy. And, I mean, I think you can argue there are different little things that Lopetegui could have done, sure, especially with the subs. But I'm not sure what else you really want, apart from you want maybe more from Asensio and Benzema, and Asensio to take his chances.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and Simeone did an interview with, and it's interesting to view how Simeone sees Atletico Madrid, because he said, he was speaking during the international break, he did a big long interview at one of the radio stations here in Spain, and he was talking about teams that don't have any history, and he literally said PSG and Manchester City don't really have any history in terms of identity and who they are, and like the way Manchester United are seen as pace, attack, you know, that's how they're seen, that's how their fans see them, that's how managers coming in, that's how they should base their selection process on managers coming in, can they adapt to that, stuff like that. And Simeone said Atletico Madrid historically are a counter-attacking team, strong, physical, and defensively solid. That's how Diego Simeone sees Atletico Madrid, regardless of whether they spend 100 million or 200 million. That's how he sees Atletico Madrid, and he will never deviate too far from that. And that's, and they have to buy players based on how he sees his team. And I think that that we saw that, and it's the same with, well, Lopetegui is kind of changing the way Real Madrid have been the last number of years in terms of counter-attacking. Well, that has been changing over time. It's really obvious now. But also, I think you have to remember as well is that when Isco is out, okay, Real Madrid are so hard to plan for because they've got so many, like if you say, for example, drop Asensio and play Isco, that's an entirely different proposition than your 4-3-3. And Isco plays a completely different role than anyone in that team. Isco, appendicitis, out. Definitely.
Yeah.
Marcelo, out. They knew that. And Simeone, all of a sudden, his planning goes from, we have to plan for X, Y, and Z, all of a sudden it's, we've planned for X, maybe a little bit of Y. But it's so much easier to plan against Real Madrid when the injuries, and I think Lopetegui wasn't helped by that, and I think Simeone was definitely helped by that. Now, I know, again, Ceballos come on.
Yeah.
And that was a little bit of, out of the blue, I would say, based on his performances and his influence in games in recent, since he joined Real Madrid. But I think Atletico had an easier assignment than they would have had Isco and Marcelo not been out.
I think that's huge. Like, yeah. Because those are two of our most unpredictable players, Isco and Marcelo.
Yeah, exactly.
I had this debate with a couple of journalists last night at the game. What, you know, like, well, do they really miss Marcelo because of the way he played with Sevilla? And I'm like, yeah, because in this game, how much did Nacho have to do defensively? And how much would Marcelo have to do defensively? I don't think he would have been tested that much. And I think there were a few times where, like, by the way, Cruz, like, just phenomenal again with his passing. I think there were a couple of times where Cruz had it on the left side, and he's just asking Nacho to make that run.
Yeah.
And Nacho, to me, kind of looked tired, and he hasn't really been himself. Marcelo was obviously going to make that run. Marcelo's going to dribble through. Nacho tried to dribble through Juan Fran a couple times in the first half, but really I thought Juan Fran did well. But also, I think they made it easy for Juan Fran too.
Yeah.
It wasn't until Vinicius Jr. came in and tried to go a little bit at Juan Fran, but Jimenez was there to mop it up too. But I mean, like, to me, Ceballos brought what Isco was supposed to bring, but Isco wasn't there. But we never really were able to replace Marcelo's influence that wasn't there last night.
Yeah, both good and bad, because it's boom or bust with Marcelo, and a player like that maybe might have worked for Real Madrid and they could have won 3-0 based on his, how much attention he draws to that side of the field. And or alternatively, Atletico Madrid might have attacked a little bit more if they knew that Marcelo was, like, when they brought Correa on, I think what Simeone had planned in that instance was that he brought Correa on to maybe give Ceballos a little bit more to do.
Mm.
but it didn't work out that way in the end, cause, and Nacho had him pretty well wrapped up. And then they made the change. I brought Saúl on Ceballos, which I think that was smart from Simeone because they had to do something. Mm. I think Saúl is actually really impressed with Saúl when he went in that role. Like, he didn't panic. He didn't really do all that much. But I was just kind of watching him on Ceballos because I was so unbelievably impressed with Ceballos last night.
Yeah.
That Saúl just knew how to play him. I suppose maybe that's because he's kind of a similar and ish player too. He knows that central midfield role, and he knew exactly how much space to give him, how much to kind of lay off him, and maybe kind of lull him into certain areas. But I think Saúl, that after that, I was kind of like, okay, now we've got a draw on our hands here. After that, once Saúl went out on the right, I was kind of thinking, right, that should do it now. Whereas before that, it was very unpredictable, it was very up in the air. I wasn't sure what was going to happen with Correa, because, I mean, for everything Angel Correa, talk about boom bust, like, for everything Angel Correa can give you with that kind of drop of his hips and his ability to go around players, he loses the ball so many times, and he did it last night. Like, players just getting a touch in on the ball and losing it, and he falls over. And yeah, like, I mean, I think defensively he wouldn't be all that solid.
I mean, Correa's kind of hit or miss. He has been for the last couple of years. Like, yeah, I mean, he has surges where he's just unstoppable.
But I think
that also goes is a testament to Real Madrid, whereas like Atleti players, whether it was Correa or even Griezmann or Diego Costa, who they just looked up and they really weren't sure where to go from there.
Yeah.
If they were getting the ball deep in their own half, they didn't have the numbers to counter. Real Madrid didn't give them space. And I think, like, Casemiro was great, snuffing out attacks. Ceballos, when he came on, was winning the ball high up the pitch.
Yeah.
Sergio Ramos, who hasn't been impressive this season, I thought last night was quite good.
Yeah,
especially early on where I thought they had they had their moments. Sergio Ramos stepped up, had a couple crucial interventions. Your point about Saúl and Ceballos is really interesting to me. And I think, to me, when Ceballos came in and he changed the game, and I guess this is essentially where we talk about Ceballos. What he brought that Real Madrid didn't have in the first half is that kind of just incisiveness, the vision to see a pass no one else sees, constantly looking forward, looking for a sense just cutting runs or passing it and then moving behind the lines himself. That kind of, I guess, lack of stagnancy is what Real Madrid needed. And he's quick, he plays really quick, he plays efficiently. He has this degree of unpredictability. When Saúl was on him, to me, Simeone is like, I need to stop the source of this, which is Ceballos, right? Because it was his chaos that he was bringing. So that helps. It's interesting, though, the dominoes of that. Like, you started to see Modric and Casemiro free for shooting, like, on the right side, or Carvajal's overlapping runs, right? I don't know what minute this all happened, but Asensio had that great chance where Kroos passes it to the right.
Yeah,
it seems like Atleti just kind of collapsed to the left a bit.
Yeah, and Kroos was decent in the first half, but it was all very kind of congested. Ceballos come on, and even, I suppose, you'd need a chessboard or like a blackboard here to logically speaking, and just in terms of how it all fit. When Ceballos comes on, he links better with Kroos, which opens up spaces for Benzema to kind of drop. Because when Benzema drops, in that 4-3-3, when he drops, like, it's more difficult. He's dropping and nothing is happening, like, you know, and he just becomes anonymous. Whereas last night, he started dropping out to the right, and he was getting involved. And then the overlap was coming. And then Kroos was finding himself in space. And then across the other field, or the other side of the field, Asensio was wide open, and because they were drawing men in, because those links and those combos and everything. And in the first half, just it wasn't there, it wasn't happening. It was just kind of more Real Madrid waiting for a moment their plan was waiting for a moment of mercurial magic from someone. But in the second half was way more strategically laid out for Real Madrid to do damage, and I think they really got at Atletico.
I think that's what they needed, was like just numbers in the midfield to start controlling the game a bit. Because in the first half, you look at the chances that Real Madrid created, it was literally like Bale shooting from like 50 yards.
Yeah, either that.
And I mean, that's great for Bale. It's like probably a good shot, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I mean, to me, it was unfortunate that Bale got injured, because I think Ceballos made sense in this game to come in. That it had to be for Bale. Like, I would have liked to see Bale and Ceballos together. I think that would, because the other thing that Bale brought was aerial presence, where if Jimenez is picking out crosses all day, Carvajal has like 7 crosses when I check, Jimenez and Godin were clearing everything.
Yeah.
And you look at who they're clearing it from, it's like Modric, Asensio.
Yeah.
Same thing happened against Sevilla, by the way, and the game before against Espanyol, where Odriozola and Carvajal or Nacho would look up for a cross, and who are they really crossing to against these behemoths? It's these little players. And that's why I thought also Mariano would have probably made sense in the second half at some point too, was just to kind of get on the ends, because no one's going to beat Jimenez and Godin in the air.
Yeah.
Unless you're Bale or Mariano.
But I think also that it was a little bit too congested in the center for a player like Mariano. He's the kind of guy that would probably relish a couple of goal poaching opportunities more so than Benzema, who's dropping out. And I think it suited Benzema more. But see, this is the issue you have with your strikers at
but
present.
But even someone to, like Mariano, to just suck those defenders away to create, because everyone, it seemed like, was just floating in and around the box, and no one. It seemed like Atletico didn't have to worry about that presence to deal with. Like, if they had just someone to think about.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. No, that's actually very true. And when I say Benzema, like, in terms of Benzema, like, he's not a focal point. Mm-hmm. And I think that they missed that so much. Now, last night, Real Madrid almost had... Well, they did have chances based on what Ceballos did and what we've just spoken about. But they... At no point against Espanyol almost, and at no point against Sevilla was Benzema like, just listen, launch it into me here and I'll scrap for it.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying that's a plan that you want to take into games and rely on, but yeah, in terms of Mariano, just like, here, send it down here and I'll battle someone and maybe do something. But I think that that's definitely what Real Madrid miss sometimes with Benzema, and it's like, that time in the Simpsons, you know, the guy is like, it's a fine pool, but sure, it is no barn, or the other way around. I was thinking, like, Benzema, he's a fine winger, but he sure is no striker. I was thinking, like, because he's not a striker, and at the moment he's not fit for purpose as a striker, I would say. And I don't want to be too harsh, and started the season well, but he's not fit for purpose as a striker.
He's faded a little bit too since that hot start, and I think one of the things that this also goes back to giving credit to Atleti. There were moments where he was in a situation where he could try to create for himself or get a shot off, and he was just swarmed by four Atleti players, and he would dribble into them, and it was done. The attack was over. And that also, you know, again, Atleti, I thought, were tremendous in kind of just denying space. They have this knack about them that they show you space and make you think that you can switch it there or something, and then it's gone when the ball goes there.
Yeah, yeah.
How quickly did they catch up to that Asensio breakaway?
Yeah.
How quickly did even, you know, Bale had a couple moments in the first half where he looked like he was in the position, they just swarmed him and it was gone. Like, they can do that.
They've become experts at it.
Yeah.
Like, they've done it for so long, and it's something that it's an aspect of their play. And they're really, really good at that. There was a couple with Asensio, actually, when he broke free. And while they were really, really dangerous, it almost felt like, when you look at it, fair enough, you have the result to base it on, but it was like, that wasn't as maybe dangerous as... It wasn't as dangerous as if it was another team playing, like, you know. And I think, I think Jimenez got booked, actually, at one stage when he closed Asensio down.
Mm-hmm.
But, they're really good at that. And I think I think it was a classic Atletico performance when they did kind of dig in. And while they're not, maybe they can't play like that against 95% of the teams in La Liga, when they do have to go back and do it, they still remember how to do it. It's still an automatic...
It's an instinct. It's a habit. It's a habitual thing.
Yeah.
I think we should get to questions.
Mm-hmm.
So these are all questions for our patrons. Some of us will take us back to the game. Some of us will take a look at what's next, the upcoming schedule, how to deal with the injuries we have. So patreon.com/managingmajors is where you go to pledge, get guaranteed responses to your questions. First question is from Sajid Reyes. He says, there's been a lot of talk of all the things and reasons and how we've slowed down in our last few games. I've heard little talk on how Isco's absence has affected us. For me, he is the best line-breaking presence we have and the best exponent we have in the final third in terms of chance creation. How much of an impact has his absence had, and how much will it affect future games? We talked about this a little bit.
Yeah.
I think Real Madrid is lucky in the sense that this upcoming schedule eases a bit. We also have an international break. Appendicitis is no joke. It's not a life-threatening thing, but the recovery is long.
Yeah, months. Yeah. It was surgery. Yeah.
Can't exercise for a while. So I think, again, it goes back to, like, Ceballos epitomized what we wanted in this game, which is what Isco would have theoretically brought. Toni Kroos, to me, this is all related. Toni Kroos, to me, is still one of the most underrated players we have in terms of just creating from nothing. Passing stats are continually fantastic. Last time I checked before this game, he had the best passing accuracy in Europe. And he has the most long passes per game. Those long passes just can completely destroy defensive lines. Atletico, obviously, a bit different because they play deeper, so you can't really hit them with that, you know, dagger pass as much. You can't get Bale on the end of through passes, which forces Bale to play deeper. And that chaos that Isco would have brought would have obviously helped in this game. But what goes back to Kroos is that oftentimes Kroos would just kind of be at a loss to see who he can pass it to and create danger. Sevilla, he had no options. This game, I think he had options to an extent, but Isco would have helped a little bit also, because Isco plays a lot on the left, and would have tried to link up a little bit and try to get him behind the lines. I don't know if you have anything to add, because I know we've talked to about Isco quite a bit so far, but...
I find it... Kroos is a it's not a difficult one, but it's a strange one, because you have to be... I think... And, like, I kind of stay away from this a little bit based on the fact that, obviously, everything you said about him is true, and he's obviously a world-class midfielder. But, there's different shades, I guess, of world-class midfielder. He's not the kind of player who's going to... And I don't know whether it's, just a charismatic thing, whether it's a leadership thing. It's kind of similar with Ozil. He's not going to... change a game, I guess, and I'm not putting him down here or anything. He's going to be brilliant when you're brilliant, when the team is brilliant, and he can be secretly brilliant, I guess, or kind of under.
He's not that alpha male type stuff who just kind of will, like, and you know.
Yeah, and I think, and back to the question about why they slowed down a little bit, it's because Modric is that player. And we've seen that time and time again. And when you look at Real Madrid over the, and I think history is going to be. It's hard to kind of put a figure or put a factor of importance on this. But I think if you look back at Real Madrid's successes in the Champions League in the last 3 years, Luka Modric is the key to everything. And even in games where he's not all that influential, he is the leader. And without really being all that vocal, he is the driving force behind that team. And I think he came back from the World Cup. Obviously, he's been exhausted. There's been questions. And I think you find that press conferences, like... A lot of the reporters who ask questions, they know a little bit more than they're maybe allowed to say, or that maybe they've heard something and they just want to maybe confirm it, and they can't just come out and say, here, I heard about this, what do you think? I think everyone knows that Modric is a little bit... He's not unhappy at Real Madrid, but I think he certainly had doubts in the summer. And he's had a whirlwind last maybe 6 months or whatever from May. No, all through last season, Real Madrid... utterly disappointing in the league, week in, week out, disappointing, just flat out disappointing. They go and win the Champions League, their third in a row, make history, incredible. Then he goes and plays with his country without having getting a proper break. He drives them to, like, the most unlikely World Cup final, like, on the crest of a wave. They get beaten. He kind of, obviously, we don't know exactly how much truth is behind the Inter Milan stuff, but there's obviously, there is something there. They were kind of pushing it a little bit.
He did come out and deny it, though.
Yeah. But I think that there was definitely more.
I think there's something behind.
Yeah, I think definitely. And okay, so he's also exhausted. There's questions being asked. Lopetegui's like, what's going on with Modric? Look, you know, and Lopetegui arrives in and he has to deal. And this is the issue I had with Lopetegui taking the job, and why a lot of the kind of top coaches that were linked with the job didn't take it, is because you're dealing with a team that, how do you motivate a team that just won 3 Champions Leagues in a row? Because Zidane knew himself, it's like, it was a really smart move by Zidane. I was like, what else can I achieve here?
Yeah.
And I think Modric is looking at it going, what else? I'm 32, what's expected of me here? And what do I expect? Not even do the fans expect of me, but what do I expect of myself? Like I've done it all, pretty much. Like, and even the disappointing league campaign last year, they had won La Liga just before that, So they've won literally everything. And I mean, there's this kind of fall off and there's this debate. And anyway, back to the point.
Yeah.
Modric is the reason why Real Madrid have slowed down.
Yeah.
And then you've got, obviously, Isco's hugely... And Isco's another guy. We're talking about creativity. Cruz, back to my point, is that Cruz isn't going to be the kind of guy who's going to... Okay, he and I don't mean this to sound disparaging of him, but he's not going to win or lose you a game. Okay, maybe he might win you a game, but he's not going to win you multiple games and drive an exhausted team to the end line. Sergio Ramos probably will. Luka Modric probably will. Isco has the ability to do that based on his creativity and things like that. But I think that when you have a drop-off, you've got Isco missing, obviously, you've got Modric exhausted. I think that's why, you've you've got Lopetegui coming in. There's loads of different factors to it, but I think that's why we've seen a little bit of a fall-off. And also, they've had a really difficult schedule over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Sevilla away, never an easy game for Real Madrid on a Wednesday night. Then you've got, and I know that managers say partido, game by game, but they've also got to think about Atletico Madrid.
Oh, they 100% they plan.
You're looking at it and you're like, how do I rotate here? Because if I don't rest players against Sevilla, it looks like I'm kind of not taking them seriously enough. And then if I don't rest players, I don't have my full complement for Atletico. If I do rest players and then I lose both games, it's a failure on every end. So it's so difficult for Lopetegui to deal with. And then you've got a couple of injuries mounting. I don't know what's going on with Odriozola. Real Madrid's, it's a really interesting time. You guys are managing Madrid, have a lot to...
It's non-stop. A lot of noise to filter through and try to get our best analysis out there. That, to me... so far, a bad sign has been the form of Modric and Asensio. No one's talking about it, but Modric just hasn't been himself since the World Cup. He has had moments of genius.
Yeah.
I don't know how well he's getting accustomed to Lopetegui wanting to play further up the pitch while Casemiro and Cruz play deeper, because he's kind of used to being this player, and I wrote about this on Friday or Thursday or something. He's the kind of player who just wants to be involved, help defensively, sling, deep-lying playmaking things, great passes from deep. I don't know how much he enjoys being like more of a passenger. He's consistently the lowest in terms of touches in the midfield and defense.
Yeah.
He doesn't see the ball as much as he did last season. He's definitely not the focal point he was in the World Cup. And when he gets the ball, he seems like I wouldn't say he's trying to do too much, but he doesn't look himself.
No.
He used to have this thing about him where once a game he does a really bad pass, gives it away, and it's shocking, but he gets it out of the system, right?
Yeah.
And he's brilliant for the rest of the game. He's having more of those this season.
He's had three or four,
but like there's no one around him, and he just passes it to an Atleti player, and Atleti are on a counterattack. That to me is and I don't want to read too much into it, but I want to, and I'm not usually the type of journalist who looks this far ahead because I think it's impossible to predict, and Modric next week is going to have the most brilliant game of his life and rebound. It doesn't matter. This is such a pivotal year for him and Kovacic in terms of what happens to both of them next season. Because if Real Madrid are in a situation at the end of the season where they say, I think we can survive without Modric at this stage of his career, and right now Kovacic looks great under Sarri, it's a no-brainer of a swap.
So Kovacic, and this come back to everything, and if you want to discuss the whole thing in context of
the
Modric.
The whole big picture.
He had a, and I'm not entirely sure how close they were, but they're two, if you're playing at a team, and if I was playing at Real Madrid and another Irish guy came in, we're going to bond, we're going to be close, we're going to look out for each other, things like that. Especially a younger guy who Modric kind of takes under his wing. Kovacic leaves. All of a sudden, Kovacic is smiling, happy, new lease on life. Modric is looking at that going, am I missing something here? And then you've got... so let's go back to the Athletic Bilbao game, okay?
Yeah.
Modric, they played in a 4-1-4-1, and this is what I'm saying back to Cruz, okay? So Cruz can't play, well, not that he can't, but he couldn't in that game.
Depends on the game.
Yeah, playing that role, okay? Modric and Ceballos were it was 4-1-4-1. Modric, Ceballos to the left, Modric to the right. Neither effective whatsoever. Ceballos hooked at halftime, and that's when Modric kind of started to... kind of free up. He's playing as so there were two number 10s, we'll say, in that instance. It didn't work because he was vying for spaces with Ceballos, and then when Modric went as the sole number 10 kind of in around that area, he started getting a little bit more of a grip with it, but he's kind of fighting between playing as a number 10 and, as you said, playing as an influential central midfielder.
Yeah.
I think that's changed under Lopetegui. And we see it all the time where managers come in and the was world-class players, and a manager comes in, and I'm not suggesting that Lopetegui doesn't trust Modric or that he doesn't rely on him, but he comes in and has his own image of the way a midfielder should play, and he sees Modric in a certain way that maybe Modric doesn't see himself. And I think that you have to deal with that after three solid years under Zidane, where Modric, I mean, you could pick the team a week in advance, barring injuries, and you'd know exactly who and when they were going to play, like, or and how they were going to play. Whereas now it's kind of, we've seen a 4-1-4-1, we've seen different variations with Ceballos, we've seen Isco playing in a kind of maybe a 4-4-2-y kind of, you know, and you see all these different variations. But I think Modric is, and then you get the exhaustion and the kind of motivation questioning everything about his career mixed into all that, and you've got a player who looks way far away from his best, and despite him winning that award just recently. But obviously he's world class and that, and he'd be fine, I think, in the long run, as you say. But he needs to find his feet under Lopetegui, and he needs to rest for a week or so, or whatever, however long it takes, and get his verve back.
No,
I was just going to say on Asensio. So it's really, and you were saying about filtering out the noise. And we're talking about results, solely based on results. Asensio scores a worldly. Mm-hmm. And you're supposed, it's kind of like my opinion, say, on Cruz, is that I kind of see him a little bit differently than I think the rest of the world sees him. And you have to be careful in terms of going completely iconoclastic, completely against the grain, because the wisdom of crowds and all that. But Asensio, we're told, after he scores a world-class goal, he's going to be world-class. That's it. He is. He's going to be world-class. He's brilliant. And he's going to be brilliant. But I think he's struggling at the moment with a little bit of maturity, and not in terms of off the field or anything like that, who he is as a player. And finding his feet as one of the main guys. Because, I mean, we're looking at, he's replacing Cristiano Ronaldo, basically, in a sense, like, he is replacing Cristiano Ronaldo. That is absolutely huge. There's so much weight on his shoulders, and he wants that. And eventually he will come around to it. But it takes a time to adjust. It was last night in the first half, I thought he was... Against Espanyol, it was kind of similar. There was a couple of chances where he broke free, kind of headless or something. He looked a little bit kind of lost as he drove forward. In the first half last night, he just kicked the ball 30 yards ahead of him and thought he was going to run onto it.
I remember. I took a note on that moment, actually.
And I was just like,
he had to be aware of his surroundings.
Yeah.
He didn't know. Like, there was no way he was going to get that. It was, yeah.
I think he was just trying maybe to do a little bit too much. Not even trying to. He just wasn't sure what he was trying to do, I think. And he had this image, I guess, of him defining the game. And he wanted to do that quickly, all of a sudden. And I think it, there comes a little bit of maturity that he needs to kind of... He's still only 22 or whatever age is, early 20s. And I think that will come in time, but I think we need to kind of temper it, because he scores a worldly. You're like looking at it going, but overall he wasn't really great, and he wasn't really... Because he tends to kind of go missing in games as well, I find. Games tend to pass him by a little bit, which will obviously come in time. But I think we need to kind of temper that a little bit and realise that he is still a young player. And like any young player, there's going to be fluctuations, more so than a 28 or 9-year-old.
Yeah. I think I wonder if there's... Last night there seemed to be a bit of a mental... lack of mental sharpness. I don't know if it's mental fatigue or whatever. He's playing a lot in the post-Ronaldo era. Mm. Now, you know, Bale came off injured and Lopetegui will... And to me, I think it makes sense. You can't not start him because he's one of the few goal-scoring threats on the team.
Yeah.
His finish against Espanyol was brilliant, by the way. He had those two crazy goals against Croatia in the international break. I see it kind of the same way you did. That moment that you mentioned in the first half was like, how can you be so unaware of his surroundings to just kick the ball up the field and try to expect to outrun someone who was clearly like way ahead of him? You mentioned the, I guess, kind of, letting games pass him by. Against Sevilla, he was a ghost.
Yeah.
They needed more movement from him. They needed him to show for the ball more. They had no outlets. Against Sevilla, great job man-marking him out of the game or whatever. But, you know, he needs to show up. He needs to be this, like, you know, this self-awareness that he is one of the most talented players in the world.
Yeah.
And he needs to step up and kind of be this almost like this alpha male presence. Yeah. There was that breakaway in the second half last night. I felt like, you know, the one where he had a lot of space. It looked like he was through on goal. It was a giveaway from, I want to say, Jimenez maybe, or Godin?
Godin, I think. Yeah.
I feel like the Asensio of last season would have been gone.
Mm, because
it seemed like he kind of just slowed down. Either he was tired, or he really thought he needed to get that ball to Benzema early on the opposite side.
Yeah, I guess that comes down to as well is what is the expectation of him last year or the year before when he broke into the team. He was like this novelty where he wasn't expected to even get that chance. He wasn't expected to score it. Like, whereas now he's probably thinking, if I'm going to be the player that I'm saying I am and they're saying I am, this has to be a goal and there's no other option. Sure. There's nothing else or else it's failure. Sure. Whereas before it was like, I've broken free now when I've gotten into my position. Everything else is a bonus. Whereas now it's like, no, I have to score or else it's a failure. And we're talking about, and it's interesting that Simeone, and this is really interesting as to how Simeone looks at the game. And this is so true. And we've seen so many times where Atletico Madrid couldn't play on that edge. He said, these games, these derbies, are games about emotions and men and players who can play at the very limit of their emotion and not be affected by it. And a 22-year-old Keon, I'm sure when you were younger, you were a lot more scattered, a lot more prone to things that happened in your life. Or not prone, you were a lot more affected by things that happened in your life than you are now, maybe.
Sure.
And I think the same with Asensio. He needs to... And this is going to come in time, with a year, maybe 18 months. And this is actually what separates the very best from the ones who don't make it. They can't figure out how to play it with that emotion. Like, that was an absolutely huge game last night. And the expectation on Asensio, and he's being interviewed with GQ, and all of a sudden he's the man. And it's figuring out those emotions, and it's a really intangible thing, but I think it's very true. And I think the players that fall to the wayside never figure out how to manage those emotions. Whereas the players who do, obviously, do figure out. And I think, as I said, a 22-year-old is way more liable to fall prey to those emotions and get caught up in the game and caught up. And as we said, Atletico Madrid have fallen prey to that so many times. They're playing on the edge of that emotion. And they've gotten men sent off before, just absolutely couldn't handle it. They just couldn't handle the moment. And you know, and they snapped or they did something silly. And I think that, as we said, coming back to the very first thing we spoke about, these games are defined by moments, and it's those moments with all the emotion and everything that's happening around you. It's the best players in the world, the very best. And we can go back to Ronaldo, who was arguably the best, Messi as well, obviously. They can handle that moment. And whether Asensio can or not, I would say yes, he is going to be able to. But it's going to take 6 months, it's going to take 8 months in the first team, playing in those moments, getting chances in those moments to figure out how he personally deals with them.
Another question from Mark Rady. He says, as Bale and Isco are injured, what does Madrid look like for the next few weeks? It looks like a few of our players need rest too. Good to see Ceballos play well in the big match. Madrid feels a bit toothless in attack at the moment. I hope Gabe didn't miss too much of his wedding for the diary. Best of luck for your wedding day, and I wish you happy marriage. I'm not sure if his wedding is today or yesterday, but I don't imagine football's on his mind right now.
I can't doubt he's listening to this. Yeah. In the carriage on the way to his wedding. Catching up.
As he's walking down the aisle. I pulled up Real Madrid's schedule here. It's not too bad. I think there's never a good time to experience injuries to Marcelo, Isco, Bale. Mm. And for Modric should be tired. And who else? God knows who else has been playing every day for the past year. Moscow away on Tuesday. Alaves away the following Saturday. Then you have an international break. At home to Levante, not bad. At home to Victoria Pleasant,
yeah.
Is that how you say it? And then that's about as good of a break you're going to get until a Clásico at the end of October.
Yeah, well, top of the table clash there against Alaves, This could be...
It's true.
Actually,
you know what? Who's to say that's an easy game?
No,
they're flying.
Absolutely.
They're flying right now.
It could be a draw,
Yeah.
But these, they're the kind of games that maybe I haven't really thought about this, so I might have to revise this on a future podcast, maybe. But they're the kind of games where Marcelo can decide. Last night, probably maybe, as I said, boom or bust. But they're the kind of games where you want maybe Marcelo rather than Nacho, because Nacho's fine defensively and solid. He'll give you 7 out of 10, 7.5 out of 10 every game. Whereas in those kind of games where teams sit back against you, that's when you need Marcelo, yeah, you'll miss him in that instance, and you'll miss Isco in that instance. But at the same time, we've seen, and we're coming back to emotions, we're coming back to the details, to the nitty-gritty of games. Ceballos is a player now full of confidence.
Yeah.
He struggled, and I think, you know what, I was actually hoping that, because I really like him as a player, and he, against Bilbao, he was taken off, and against Sevilla, he came on, he just kicked around the place, and he had no chance. They were 3-0 down. I mean, the most unfavourable situation. The Bilbao game wasn't really his fault because of the way that Bilbao set up, and there was no one played really that well in that first half. He was taken off at halftime. Last night was the first instance where he came on with favourable circumstances, like circumstances where he could actually do something. And
try.
I think he absolutely passed the test. He's a player now who Lopetegui has confidence in. He convinced him to stay in the summer, like he said it. In the summer, he said, if Zidane had a stayed, he said, it's pretty clear, he said, I would have been looking for an exit. And Lopetegui came in, convinced him to stay, has given him plenty of minutes. I think I said it last recently, at this stage, or maybe a game or two ago, at that stage of the season, after 4 or 5 or 6 games, he had 4 minutes.
Hmm.
Now he has, like, in the hundreds already.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's only going to get better. He's only going to give, and when Isco's back, he's only going to, now it might get a little bit, that kind of might be a bad thing, because he might get a little bit, it might get a little bit too complicated, and Lopetegui might overthink it, and he might be forced kind of to make certain decisions and things like that. But I think we're looking at a player now, Ceballos, who will, he'll love that game against Alaves. He'll love those games in the Champions League against Moscow, and I think he's a player with confidence now, and he could just be, Real Madrid will be absolutely fine before Isco comes back. The only thing I would say is I'd worry maybe if Isco isn't back for that game, and then you're looking at, okay, hurry on there, bud. We kind of need you.
My hunch is I'd be surprised if he's back for the Clásico.
Yeah, because he's going to have to get fit.
It's not easy recovering. I'm only saying this because my sister actually went through this same surgery, and it was tough. Was really tough. I mean, he may be, but I my hunch is that he may not be.
No, I don't. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing we have to remember is he looked a little bit sluggish to begin with anyway this season. He was just finding his feet. He was getting back into his groove. We were seeing the Isco of old maybe in the last 2 games, and then you get hit with this. I think it's going to take him just a little bit longer than maybe
just to get back into it.
Yeah, but
Sad Omar says, I believe Lopetegui is the wrong person for the job.
Ooh.
His style of play is failing spectacularly against every significant opposition we have gone against. We're playing a high possession style with a team full of players who predominantly flourish on a counter-attacking style. He's imposing an outdated Barca pass-all-day style that was effective with the national team, but very ineffective with the personnel that Real Madrid has. What odds do you give Lopetegui at lasting pass this season? Why is Lopetegui favoring Lucas over Mariano when we need goals? Is it favoritism towards their countryman, Ala Zidane? So I don't think there's any country favoritism. I think that's just rubbish. But it's the same thing that, you know, everyone was like criticizing Lopetegui, always going to favor all the Barca players. That just didn't happen.
Yeah.
I think, and by the way, Mariano is still eligible for call-up for Spain.
If
that counts for anything.
Yeah, yeah.
One thing is true in this, it's that so far we've had 4 tests.
Yeah.
Atletico Super Cup, lost.
Bilbao
tied.
Sevilla
lost. Atletico tied. We haven't gotten, I mean, on the flip side, it's nothing unique. Sid Lowe put out a tweet a couple of days ago where he went back to the last, I want to say 27 games against Barcelona and Real Madrid. It's just not a good record.
No.
So I don't know how much you want to pin that on Lopetegui. I really think that last night was a difficult match. I really think that fans can't just expect to go into a game like this for 3 points. Again, tweaks and some things you could have done different, sure, but no manager will get all those things perfect, and a lot of these things you only will learn after the game and once you kind of go back and analyze it. I think Atletico were spectacular defensively. I think we had a couple chances which we didn't take, which would have changed the conversation. In terms of does Lopetegui have the personnel for this, his strength is in midfield, which is the same strength as Spain. Brainiacs in central midfield, like Modric, Kroos, Isco, Ceballos, who can dictate possession. It's part of their game. And I think that a lot of teams just won't allow you to play counter-attacking.
Yeah.
Literally, we can see Real Madrid play counterattacking 4 or 5 times a year, and it's in the Champions League against teams like Bayern, PSG, who will actually go at you.
Yeah.
No one else in La Liga is going to go at you like that to allow you to play. You can't counterattack against such a deep team against Atletico, like Atletico.
No, absolutely, yeah. And I think that that's the same problem that Atletico had, maybe when they first started getting better. At first, teams would go at them, and they could counterattack, and then all of a sudden, teams used to try and beat them at home, like beat them in their home, and all of a sudden, it went from 3 points, a good result against Atletico, to we'll settle for a point and being under pressure. And that's when Simeone had to switch and try to kind of think of it. He had to adjust his style and adjust the way that Atletico play. And while there was no revolution, as they say, there was evolution. And we're seeing that now with... We saw it with Spain and Lopetegui, and that was something that was levelled at Spain under Lopetegui and at Spain in general for years now, is that there's no directness. And I think that Lopetegui has been let down by Florentino, and not let down, but like, because I've been trying to figure out what Perez is doing in terms of their transfer strategy. Like, and I understand that they're not going to get involved in and they're not going to get involved in a crazy transfer market and buy players for ridiculous amounts of money when you're not really entirely sure about them. I think that's why they left PSG alone this year. They were like, we're not going to get into a war here with PSG, and because PSG felt like they were kind of ready to go scorched earth strategy.
It's just that the market right now is just crazy.
Yeah. But they stuck with Benzema, and for a while with Ronaldo, it was Benzema got by because Real Madrid were winning and things like that. But like, I mean, you were there last night. Did you hear the whistles for Benzema?
Yeah.
Like, it was quite bad.
That's nothing new.
Yeah, no, I understand. But that's just going to keep getting worse. And I think that Benzema, and what I feel like it was, I think it was kind of magical thinking from Real Madrid in the summer. If we keep saying we believe in him, if we keep saying it'll be fine. When all the evidence points to the fact that it won't be fine. And I think that Benzema, and I don't mean to disparage the chap, and it's hard enough, but I think maybe he could have done with a move away and bring in someone, maybe like Icardi, or maybe Mariano can take that place. But I just think that with the goals that they lost with Ronaldo, I think that playing Benzema there, who's not, like, I mean, like you said, he was running into, and I understand Atletico were kind of crowding him out, but Atletico knew that there was a chance to dispossess him when he got the ball, and they were kind of targeting him a little bit. The ball was getting caught under his feet. There was one stage he ran over it and back-heeled it away and lost possession. And like, the Bernabeu was getting on his back, and I just feel like Lopetegui, so he brought Diego Costa into his Spanish side to kind of fix that directness and maybe someone who could kind of slice through a packed defence.
Yeah.
I think Real Madrid need a striker, a focal point, someone who's just going to maybe have a go. And Benzema isn't that kind of a striker, for as good as he played in the second half, and he improved. But Real Madrid, with Real Madrid and the fans, there is no context a lot of the time. You either score or you fail.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it's not, oh, well, hold on now, his XG. You either score or you fail.
Yeah.
It's not a case of, there's nothing else. There's no grey area. It's either you score and you win, or it's failure. And I think Benzema too often relies on the card. Not relies on the card, this is the player that he is. He is the kind of player who isn't going to score, but he will facilitate in many ways. And then when they don't win, the drops on him, and the judgment is made. And I think that Real Madrid need a striker who's a little bit more direct.
I don't think there's any question that this summer we put our eggs in a risky basket.
Yeah.
So you're relying on one Bale's health, which, by the way, I haven't seen the diagnosis yet to even know what this is. It may not be anything serious. It's not based on what happened last night.
It's an overload. It's a sobre cargo. An overload.
Yeah.
But
they were going to assess it this morning, so I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
So one, you're relying on that. And the second thing, you're relying on an uptick in Benzema on virtually zero sample size. Because we've never known what it was like to have Benzema without Ronaldo.
Yeah.
You're relying on, okay, so without Ronaldo, he's going to thrive at the age of 30. What is he now? 30, I think?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, we wrote about this a lot over the summer. It was like, okay, we can understand the logic around behind a lot of this, but it's risky. And again, who knows? Maybe Real Madrid will rebound and win the treble. Unlikely, but you know they may win the league. I think when you see Benzema cool off and Bale not around, then you start really seeing some of these issues surface. And the, and your point about maybe Real Madrid just needs someone, a presence, like a target, like an Icardi, which who probably wasn't available anyway because I think he loves Inter. Or a Mariano, which was actually has been lacking against Espanyol, Sevilla, and Atletico. Yeah. That presence has been lacking, and if we're being real.
Yeah.
So.
And I, as you said, it's a risky basket, but it was the only basket available in many ways.
Yeah.
Well, there was another very, very, very expensive basket that they could have maybe, but that was unviable. But yeah, like as
they
you said,
got really lucky, I think, that Sevilla wanted to trigger the Mariano thing, right?
I was actually thinking about that though, but like, why didn't Real Madrid just buy him?
I think with the way another team triggers his clause or wants to purchase him, they actually get him for cheaper, right?
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So instead of paying like 40 something million, they pay like 20 something.
Ah, okay. Because I was thinking about that because after the game we were at recently, we sat down and chatted and you explained that to me. And I was kind of thinking about it after. I was like, oh, yeah, yes. Kian dropping some knowledge on me. And I was
rare,
about,
but it happened.
No. And I was thinking about that and I was like, oh, that's really, yeah. So Sevilla saved the day for Real Madrid. And the more I thought about it, and I was like, but why didn't they just buy him? But now that makes sense because if they get that and then there's a cheaper option, okay. Which isn't a great vote of confidence for Mariano. Did they really want him then? Like, I mean, not okay. Obviously, there's a
they gave him the seven. There's a little.
The what?
They gave him the seven. That
oh,
cancels the.
But like, okay, I understand that there's a bar of chocolate there, and it's €10. No, I'm not gonna. I don't want it at €10.
You only buy it on sale.
I love it. Yeah, but I buy it for €1. And I get that, but bar of chocolate.
No, it's an interesting perspective.
No, but it doesn't have the bar. Doesn't have. Feelings, so it doesn't know that I didn't want it at 10. No, but I'm just wondering how badly they wanted him. And like, they told Mayoral to stay, and he was stung by that. Mayoral said, I'm going to stay, and they've convinced him to stay, and all of a sudden Mariano was like, that's a slight upgrade, maybe. Let's do that.
Well,
and it was like, okay, how much do you actually believe in this?
It was also a situation where they just couldn't say no, not only for the price, because from a PR perspective, Mariano goes to Sevilla, lights the league on fire.
Yeah.
You just, and Benzema's.
And
not
it comes
scoring.
Out then that they rejected it. And No, and Perez said about the DNA and he's got Real Madrid in his blood and he's got that kind of. But that's what, and Fernando Morientes came out and said, he kind of similar, I suppose, to Mariano in many ways, and he was like, he's the player that they needed. He said, Benzema, and this is exactly what I'm saying. Benzema's more of a 10, and Mariano's the player that Real Madrid needed, and I feel like that, but we haven't seen that. And I'm sure there'll be chances now in the next few weeks to see that. This is coming back to the kind of the CYA style of coaching, the kind of cover your ass style of coaching. It's so risky to start Mariano in a game because there's so much collateral damage. If you drop Benzema, Benzema's confidence is shattered, you're gone. Mariano comes on, doesn't play well, and then all of a sudden Lopetegui is seen as someone who comes in disrupting everything, but you're still not winning. So now he's got maybe Pilsen, they've got Moscow, they've got Alaves, they've got Levante. Couple of chances here for Mariano to really show himself, and we're going to see now how much they believe in the Mariano Diaz project.
I think you have to go soon.
So
I guess we'll wrap it up here. I'll answer some questions later on my own. I hope the podcast is okay. If you hear background noise, it's because, like, you know,
we're at a disco.
We're at a disco club, and it's actually quite, there's this paradise because it's like a disco at 2:30 p.m. and there's birds chirping, there's music playing, there's kids singing. There was a kid crying earlier, a dog barking. It's quite a spectacular disco.
I was trying to convince...
It's also like 30 degrees. It's hot in here.
Yeah. I was trying to convince Keon to tell the listeners that we've been at the disco all night and we're just continuing on into the early morning, but that's not the case.
It's the journalism grind.
We both got very good night's sleep last night.
We did. Thank you, Robbie Dunn.
No problem.
Appreciate all your work, all that you do. I'm sure we'll do this in person again. I guess until next time, thank you for listening.
Adios.
All right, Robbie's gone. This is, I guess, part two. Literally, like, he just got and I'm still here recording in this. It's a gorgeous park, by the way. This is a park that Alex Kirkland introduced me to on our podcast last year. And it's just a nice ambiance. Good for recording podcasts. Next patron question is from Adrian Rios. He says,
I have two criticisms slash questions. One, when can we start blaming Lopetegui for these horrible subs, not bringing in Mariano when Benzema was playing sloppy and instead you bring Lucas Vasquez? I don't even know what he offered. Two, is this, well, let's address the first one. I agree with not bringing in Mariano being a bad call. I think he was everything that, one of the things that Real Madrid needed was just that presence that Robbie and I were just talking about throughout this podcast. So I agree with you there. Lucas Vasquez, I'm assuming the logic behind it, and I didn't even get a chance to ask Lopetegui about this after the game. By the time I got in the press conference, it was actually, I was late for the Simeone presser, and then I had to go shortly after, so I didn't even stick around. So I don't even, I'm not sure if he addressed why Lucas Vasquez was brought on. But to me, the logic behind it was probably that Atletico are a team that can literally do nothing for 90 minutes and in the 91st decide to score. And if Real Madrid are in that situation, my only thought process behind this is that Lucas Vasquez can help defend in transition and the counterattack. So that's, you know, to me, I think you could have just gotten away with having Casemiro play a bit deeper and Real Madrid just continually winning possession half the pitch as they had been doing in the second half with Ceballos. I agree with you on that one, Adrian. The second part of this question, Adrian says, is this Modric's last season with us? It feels like the smartest thing to do for Perez is to sell Modric in the summer, as his stock is still relatively high, and promise Kovacic's position. So again, I think, you know, we kind of address this. I'm not saying whether they should or they shouldn't, but we'll know at the end of the season kind of where both of these players are in their trajectory. And you know, we kind of laid out what's kind of happening with both of them. But it's not inconceivable Modric has a great year and does great things with us this season. I also just think that Real Madrid will have to really figure out. And it also depends on what Kovacic is thinking too. It really feels like maybe he's just done with Madrid. I don't know. But we'll see. Chris Wilkie says, is it Reguilón time? This question came in before the game, but I think it's a question we want to address still. It's just interesting to speak about. Chris says, with Marcelo unfortunately out for a bit, will the mister give some real chances to Sergio Reguilón at left back? I love Nacho. We know he bleeds white, but Reguilón looked promising in preseason and could give us a youthful boost as soon as the derby this weekend. It seems to me that many of our terrific veterans have tired legs and could use the injection of energy a young, promising player like Reguilón could have. So I think that Reguilón, it's interesting because a lot of us just couldn't stop talking about him. And by us, I mean just like the media, not necessarily me in general. I liked him. I saw him a lot with Castilla last season. He was one of their best players. He looked promising in the preseason. It is kind of strange that he just kind of disappeared off the face of the earth. He's not with Castilla and he's not playing with the A team. He's training with the A team and that's about it. If there's a time to play him, it would be logical to do it around this upcoming schedule that has some easier games. But again, I don't know how much you want to, I guess, dig deep into your roster to kind of unearth him. My feeling is you probably get away with playing him against Vitória Plzeň before the Clásico. I don't know if Lopetegui tries him before that. Maybe a cameo against Alaves, although that's a really difficult game. They've been flying under Abelardo. I don't know if Levante is a good game for him. I think that Nacho is starting to burn out a little bit, is my feeling. He played a lot in the World Cup. He's been playing a lot due to injuries, suspension. Vallejo still is another one, by the way. We just haven't seen it in a long time. I think if we say Reguilón, it would make sense to see him now-ish. I just don't know what it looks like or if Lopetegui trusts him enough to put him over Nacho. Sheikh Atiri, last couple questions. He says, I'd never heard somebody pronouncing Sanchez Pizjuan as Keon does. What is the Spanish pronunciation? Unfortunately, I don't have anyone to really grab and ask right now. I will say, I thought I did an okay job of saying it, Sanchez Pizjuan, but maybe in the future, if I get a Spanish-speaking person on the podcast, then I'll just ask them to say it. Just remind me. Second question. Keon, you're a fellow Persian. How dare you put any cuisine above Persian, traitor? Look, you know, nationalities, these things, and we've become such an intertwined, intermixed species now that, you know, we're all kind of from everywhere. I have an aunt that's Sri Lankan. And nothing beats her cooking. That's all. I gotta say it. Persian cuisine, having said that, really is unparalleled if you get the right stuff. There is nothing better. Like the curries we make, there's a lot of good things in Persian cuisine. And actually, Robbie actually wanted to talk about this. I'm sad that he had to leave. He saw the question. He was like, oh, let's talk about that. I don't know what he had in his mind, but unfortunately, he can't kind of speak for it. Lucas Navarrete and I, he will die on the hill that nothing beats a Spanish rice, but I've been trying to explain to him, you don't know rice until you eat Persian rice, because the amount of oil and kind of condiments and stuff that complement the Persian rice, the saffron, everything, it's incredible. All right, I got to head out of this park. I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. I hope the sound was okay. I guess Wednesday, I think Gabe will be back, so we'll do a midweek show for our patrons. On Tuesday, Matt Wiltsy, Sam Sharp, and I will record a Lone Tracker podcast for our patrons. A lot to talk about because we had a lot going on. Kovacic playing well for Chelsea. Ashraf, an assist to Alcacer in Dortmund's win over the weekend. He also scored a goal earlier in the week in Dortmund's thrashing. So. And Oscar, you know, Oscar scoring against Barca, that was another one. There's a lot going on with Real Madrid's low knees. Later today, I'm going to be watching Odegaard, I'm going to be watching Mayoral, and I'm going to be watching someone else. I can't remember. The schedule is all mixed up. I have to look at the schedule. But this is Kian Sobhani signing off, and Hala Madrid.
Introducing the amazing iPhone XS you'll love on T-Mobile, the most loved in wireless. It's the perfect way to stay connected to those you heart most. Fall in love with iPhone XS on T-Mobile. And right now, trade in an eligible iPhone and you'll save $300. Visit a store or call 1-800-T-MOBILE.
If you cancel service, remaining balance is due. Qualifying service and finance agreements required. $279.99 down plus 30 per month times 24. Full price $999.99. 0% APR for well-qualified buyers plus tax on full price. Allow 8 weeks for rebate.
Introducing the amazing iPhone XS you'll love on T-Mobile, the most loved in wireless. It's the perfect way to stay connected to those you heart most. Fall in love with iPhone XS on T-Mobile. And right now, trade in an eligible iPhone and you'll save $300. Visit a store or call 1-800-T-MOBILE.
If you cancel service, remaining balance is due. Qualifying service and finance agreements required. $279.99 down plus 30 per month times 24. Full price $999.99. 0% APR for well-qualified buyers plus tax on full price. Allow 8 weeks for rebate.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.